This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Rick, still without internet, living that Amish life out on the island. And Mr. Canty, I'll tell you, I could not make it for, we talked about this yesterday, I could not make it for 3 or 4 days without any cable or internet or anything right now. I would move into a Panera or a Starbucks, but you can't even stay in there right now. I mean, I guess I'd move into the parking lot like he's done.
See, this is when you got to have some close friends or family where you don't mind hanging out with them for a couple of days if they have power. That's exactly what you need in these times if you don't have power.
Yeah. But
yeah, I take it from you. You're not the typical Boy Scout. You're not going to go out there and be able to fend for yourself with no power.
Well, I mean, I'll make something work. I'll find a way to make something work, but I am not the kind of guy that you want coming over to your house and hanging out for a couple of days. I mean,
why would you say something like that?
Because
you seem like you're the everyman. You seem like a guy's guy.
I am the everyman, but after a while, you're going to get a little tired of me asking where you keep the chips. I mean, this is a problem.
Well, see, I didn't say you could go over somebody's house empty-handed now. I mean, it's customary to bring a 12, right? Like, that's just standard operating procedure.
Well, I usually bring an 11-pack and take one right out of the 12. That's how we start. 800-919-3776. Carlin in for Dave today, along with Mr. Canty, up until noon. Islanders playoff hockey game 4 against the Panthers coming up then. And, Chris, it's absolutely 100% official. The Yankees have a major problem on their hands, and I understand that nobody wants to hear about the first world problems of the New York Yankees, but this starting pitching beyond Tanaka is a major problem. And so I'm going through last night, and I'm getting ready to do the podcast, Savages in the Box, by the way, Yankees podcast, mm-hmm. every day, Monday through Friday. And I'm going through the numbers of the other starters. I'm not counting the opener here.
Okay.
The other starters not named Gerrit Cole so far.
All right.
3 1/3 they are averaging. And an 8.1 ERA.
Ooh. Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, the ERA gets a little better when you include the starter or the openers. But, you know, the distance, the length is what I'm most concerned about right now.
No, as you should be. I mean, you want your starters to be able to go out there and at least give you 5 quality innings. I mean, we all recognize that it's early in the season and the ramp up was a little bit strange. I think they only had like 3.5 weeks. So it's not like the starting pitchers had the opportunity to get into their normal routine that they would before a season in spring training. But, I mean, your starters have got to be better. Like yesterday, Jordan Montgomery was terrible. It was terrible. He's got to be better. There's no excuse for it. Jay Happ in the matinee of the doubleheader was terrible the day before. Like, they've got to be better. And so, I mean, I'm not going to push the panic button because we're still talking about a team that's 20% through the season and they're 9-3. So I feel good about where the Yankees are at. We know they're going to be a playoff team. And we know that they have 2 pitchers that we trust if they're healthy in Gerrit Cole and Masahiro Tanaka in the postseason. The biggest question is who's going to be that third arm that you can rely on. We thought that would be James Paxton, especially what we had been hearing coming out of spring training and then summer training 2.0, but he's gotten off to an awful start to this season. So it's just kind of like we don't know where he's going to be at post-back surgery. So there are some question marks with the starting pitching staff, but the biggest being what's going to happen with James Paxton, and is he going to be that third starter that you can rely on in the postseason to take the hill?
Normally, I wouldn't get this wound up about this. Even if we were in a normal regular season where you were in the early part of August, they seemingly would have addressed a need or two, if not for the normal trade deadline. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even be panicking at this point. And again, I would strongly suggest I'm not quite using the word panic yet. However,
there's no reason to panic, right? Because we know the Yankees are going to be in the postseason. And if this continues to be a problem, Brian Cashman has the ammunition to address it.
Right, but I have 2 concerns here. Number one, the playoff structure for this season. And number two, the fact that what great starting pitcher is going to become available here in the next 3 weeks? Or what, or even what very good starting pitcher? Maybe a guy like Mike Minor or something like that, maybe. But that doesn't feel to me like a guy that definitively solves the problem. And
No. I don't look at Mike Minor as the solution for a guy that we want in a postseason start. No.
Exactly. So, no. Yeah. So that problem is not easily solved. But, Chris, here's the bigger issue. And because we know they're going to be in the playoffs, because we know they're perfectly well constructed to go dominate in the regular season, but the Yankees are consistently about the playoffs, and the season is already 20% over. Mm-hmm. Two out of three in round one, no matter if you're the top seed or the bottom seed, would scare the daylights out of me. And I know you feel good about your first two, but you know, in a scenario like that, I might even think about trying to hold back Gerrit Cole for a game three if there was one. And, you know, if I win the first two games, great. But I don't know who I would start in the third game.
Yeah, I don't know about holding back Gerrit Cole in game one.
In that scenario, I'd think about it.
No, I don't know if I would, man. I mean, you can't get too far ahead of yourself. You can't count the wins before they actually happen. And you paid the guy $324 million this offseason for a reason. The first postseason game, he is going to be the starter. There's no question about that. And game two is going to be, you know, if we keep seeing the same thing from Paxton, game two is going to be Tanaka. So, I mean, it becomes a question of, can James Paxton right himself in time in order to instill the confidence in Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman that he's going to be the guy in a postseason start? And knowing that all you need in a postseason start is for this guy to go out and give you five innings. That's all you need. Give us five innings. We can turn it over to the bullpen and close the door on the opposing team's lineup. That's what you're looking for. But, yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit concerned about the starting pitching as well. Like, there's going to have to be some tweaks if we keep seeing what we're seeing beyond Gerrit Cole in the rotation. No question about it.
And I think that with that being the case, I don't know what that tweak is. Maybe that tweak is somebody like a Clark Schmidt. You know, he's a guy that they looked at a little bit in camp, and they have some depth. But these, Chris, given their situation, and I know you don't want to count the wins before you have them. Mm-hmm. But these are guys that I might start looking at when you have these doubleheaders to play. You know, they're going opener on Saturday. But look at how much the pen has been used so far. And I know they haven't pitched all season. I know, but when you have the strange ramp up and all that, I don't want to run those guys into the ground in the early part of the year.
No, you don't want to run them into the ground in the early part of the year, but that's when you rely on guys like Luis Sessa and Jonathan Loaisiga and David Hale and Jonathan Holder. And those two guys did a good job last night. Like, Hale and Holder did a pretty good job. They gave you four scoreless innings. So, I mean, they gave you a shot to stay in the game. And we saw that the Yankees came close. Gary Sanchez with that two-run knock in the seventh inning, which was nice to see. Caught a fastball on the outer half and took it the opposite field. Like, if the guys in the bullpen can keep the game close, you know that somebody in that lineup is going to be capable of doing damage and manufacturing some offense. So, I mean, that's really what you want. We talk about this starting pitching as a huge concern, but the way that Brian Cashman built this team, it wasn't around starting pitching. It was around a really strong lineup and the best bullpen in baseball. And so all you need your starting pitching to do outside of Gerrit Cole is just not to go out there and lose it for you. So that's a pretty low bar to clear in the regular season. I think you can give yourself an opportunity to get a look at some of your young guys like Clark Schmidt. I think that's the perfect opportunity for that. We'll see if they decide to go that route, but I think that's all contingent on what we see from Paxton, what we see from Montgomery, what we see from Happ moving forward.
Now, I do want to play this one cut from Boone last night about it, because as you would expect, he is not, you know, jumping off the building quite yet about the fact that they have not gotten good length from their starters so far.
The way our roster's constructed, you know, it does allow us to have some couple more arms in the bullpen. Nothing beats several outings from your starters that give you length that really kind of preserve and set everyone up down there in that pen. And obviously a couple guys were working back and Massa building him up, hoping to get Paxton rolling like we know he's capable of. So on the long haul, we got to do a little better job of that.
I am so interested in seeing Paxton on Sunday. I'm fascinated.
It's a big start for him, CC.
It really is.
That's a huge start for him. Like, I mean, you know, you're talking about him giving confidence to Booney and the guys in the clubhouse and the Cashman about what he's going to bring to the table. But how about just giving himself some confidence? Like, at some point, you start to wonder, like, am I really going to ever get back from this back thing? I mean, you don't hear about guys getting older and their backs getting better. So, I mean, a question mark about his performance, you know, it's legitimate. Like, we don't know what kind of pitcher he's going to be post-back surgery, and that was a concern. But based on all the things we had heard throughout spring training, and then when they came back to resume and get ramped up for the season, James Paxton looked phenomenal. Like, that's what we had heard.
Yeah.
And we're seeing a very different story play out as the season has gotten underway. So I'm just – you wonder, are we going to see the same James Paxton ever? And this is a walk year for him. So you know the guy is motivated. He wants to pitch well. But the question is whether or not he can pitch well. If his velocity can't get out of the low 90s with his fastball, he's going to have a problem.
Oh, a major problem. Because what makes him so good is the ability to throw the ball at 96, 97.
And then change speeds with that curveball.
Yeah, that curveball, that slider, whatever it is, that dives into right-handed hitters.
That Uncle Charlie.
it is brutal on right-handed hitters. And look, this was not supposed to be the issue. This was not supposed to be the problem because we had talked so much about needing to go get an ace. Well, they did that, and then one of the other key pieces is not performing at that level because of the surgery. I am just hopeful at this point, if I were a Yankee fan, that this truly is him ramping back up. But the way he's talked about it so far, Chris, he sounds concerned about where his velocity is.
Well, I'm sure he is. I mean, it's got to be frustrating to go out there and think you've got something and you can't quite get to where you once were as an athlete. Like, I'm sure that he's trying to find answers, and I'm not sure that there are any because, I mean, again, when you start talking about a guy that had a major back surgery this offseason, there's going to be a question of whether or not he's ever going to be the same player until he goes out and he proves that he's capable of having those same type of performances. So, yeah, we felt good about James Paxton after last postseason and him having that Yankees moment in that Astros series. But, I mean, that's not the guy that we've seen on the mound in 2020. And until we see some semblance of the Paxton we saw in 2019, there's always going to be that question mark. The only problem with that is you're talking about this season being a sprint, not a marathon, and you're going to run out of chances in order for James Paxton to flash enough to give you confidence that he's going to be good in a postseason start.
Now, one thing off of that that I was thinking about a lot watching last night, especially after the first inning when Real Muto homered again, was it wasn't that long ago, prior to the 2019 season, where there was a lot of talk around the Yankees trying to get Syndergaard, and it would have involved a Real Muto trade with the Mets and the Marlins, the three-way deal. But then there was also discussions about them trying to go and get Real Muto on their own. Now, Jeter and the Marlins tried to hold him up, okay? They wanted Sanchez and Andujar, which I would think we would all agree you would never want to give that much up in return. But yeah. The Yankees were apparently willing to give up, or were not willing to give up, wouldn't even have done just a Sanchez straight up. And Chris, as I look forward here, so he homers last night, but...
And I think he's like, 3 for 30 on the season?
Right. And, all right, maybe he's not snapping great out of it. They're talking about his timing. As a player overall, how long can you continue to hold on to him given the remarkable inconsistency with which he plays?
Oh, man. I mean, you're going to try to give him every opportunity, right? I mean, you're talking about a guy when he's rolling that can hit 30 to 35 home runs. And if you have that at the catcher position, you have a distinct advantage against pretty much every team in baseball. So I can understand why Brian Cashman is giving him a long leash because the talent is undeniable. It's just being able to get it consistently out of him. And that's the part about it where you just – you don't know about Gary Sanchez, right? The sports psychology of it. I mean, the Yankees moved on from Joe Girardi because Joe Girardi had, you know, that iron fist. He kind of hovered over the players, and he had that intensity that didn't relent. And players don't necessarily respond the best to that, especially today's athletes. And one of those guys that, you know, we had the question about on whether or not he was going to respond well to Girardi's managerial style was Gary Sanchez. And so they moved on from Girardi. They went with Aaron Boone. And, you know, it's kind of been a mixed bag the last couple of years with Sanchez. And so, yeah, I the potential is there. But as Bill Parcells used to always say, potential means you just haven't done it yet. And with Gary Sanchez, we haven't consistently seen him put it together enough to give us full confidence that he is going to find himself and right himself when he gets into these types of slumps.
I never have a problem when you have players that go through slumps. Every player goes through a slump. The problem is his slumps last 2 months. Can't afford that. Yeah. And so it just has me thinking forward here a little bit, tying into what we were just saying. And I know how this is going to sound. And I understand that it might be a little bit even annoying for a Yankee fan to hear it. But there is a scenario under which, if there is truly a star pitcher who's available, who's got another year or two left of control, and I don't know who that guy is right now, okay? I can't put a name to a face because of where we are in this bizarre season. Mm-hmm. But if there were a guy that we truly felt was a difference maker for the Yankees this year, Real Muto is somebody that I'm looking at for the future, who's a free agent after this year. Mm-hmm. I might consider dealing Sanchez in the right deal this during the season this year. Now, it's a little bit crazy just because they seem to, and very unlikely, because they do seem very pleased with what he's doing defensively and how he's working with the pitching staff.
Yes. Yes. Especially with Gerrit Cole. Right, yeah. Because a few days ago, Gerrit Cole singled him out, and he said, listen, he called an awesome game behind the dish. And when you have your ace praise your catcher for calling a great game, you don't want to disrupt that flow that he's got for the game. You don't want to do anything that could throw Gerrit Cole off, because he's a guy that you're relying heavily on, knowing all the question marks that you have in your starting rotation behind him. So I hear what you're saying about Gary Sanchez, but then you have to look at your alternative, like who's going to be your catcher. It would have been different if you still had Austin Romine, but you got Kyle Higashioka. Do you feel great about him being your everyday catcher?
No.
All right.
Especially after what I saw the other day.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's just one of those things. Like, I don't know if we necessarily want to go down that road with championship aspirations this season. But it's an interesting proposition once we get past this year and into the offseason. Because you could acquire Real Muto and all you'd be spending is money.
Right.
And he is one of the best offensive catchers in the game.
And that's the thing. Like, for me, you look at that guy and he's going to be more consistent at the plate. He may not hit 35 home runs, but he hits 25.
There you go. And you can win with that.
Yeah. I mean, he drove in more runs than Sanchez did last year. He drove in 83 runs. Yeah. So he's hitting cleanup in that lineup. And defensively, it's not close. I mean, Gary's improved. And what I do enjoy about how he is handling himself right now is he's clearly not taking it into the field with him like he did in years past.
No, it's not. It's not. And that's growth from a player, right? That's... Yep. That's a sign of growth. He's 27 years old, so he's still relatively young, and he still has time to figure it out. It's just a matter of how patient Brian Cashman and Aaron Boone want to be.
Yeah. I think at this point, with how he is offensively, considering there's not a truly better option, he's not hitting the bench anytime soon.
No.
If he is not snapping out of this like they seem to think that he is. But, you know, I always raise an eyebrow or two to that kind of stuff, because when guys are in slumps, you always hear managers and coaches and such say, well, you can see that he's close. You know, you hear that all the time. And that was he hit it hard yesterday for the home run, and maybe his timing is coming back a little bit. But that real inconsistency, as lengthy as it is, just absolutely drives me nuts.
No, and it should, but you see that from young players, right? You see young players, you know, they're erratic. There's a lot of really high highs, and then there's a lot of lows. And you just, as they get older, you look for them to kind of stabilize and be more consistent. you know, and you want them to be somebody that you can depend on. You know what you get from game to game, week to week, and so on. And so Gary Sanchez is getting around that time where you start to see that player become a lot more consistent. The only problem is he hasn't. And that's why I say, you know, it's hard for everybody to have confidence that he's ever going to fully realize all the potential that we've seen in him throughout the years and become that guy that's that dominant force, that presence in your lineup. You know what I mean? Like when you got Aaron Judge, you know what you're going to get from Aaron Judge. Even if he's in a slump, he's a bat that you got to deal with. Like, he has a plan. He's going to put together a quality at bat. He's going to put pressure on the opposing pitcher and the opposing defense. And if nothing else, he's going to pass the baton to the next guy in the lineup. Whereas with Gary Sanchez, there are times he just looks lost at the plate. Like, he's just flailing away. And that's the part that you want to see him eliminate out of his game. Like, even when you're going through a slump, you know, when you start talking about the guys that you trust the most, they're able to right themselves in short order. And as you mentioned earlier, Gary Sanchez, this is one of those things that could be months. And that's the part that he's got to change. We'll see if he's able to grow. But, I mean, this is, again, not the most opportune time for him to be dealing with this, just knowing what kind of season we got in 2020. It's only 60 games. You only have but so much time.
Right. Now, one last one on the Yankees. And we're going to hit the calls here early, so get on board at 800-919-3776. He did not start last night, but he comes off the bench, and all the guy does is hit.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of consistency and short slumps when he has them, Yankees can't let DJ LeMahieu hit the open market.
Oh, no.
No. I mean, that's something that if they're not talking about it right now, they should be talking about it right now. They should be talking about it because it is later in the year, shorter season. I don't want him to get to the offseason because that – I think I'm going to be able to outbid everybody else. Sure. But this is a guy that seems very comfortable here, and maybe I can get something done now.
Yeah, I mean, DJ LeMahieu, what he means to your team, not just offensively but defensively as well. I mean, he can play three positions in your infield. He gives you a lot of versatility and flexibility with your lineup. You know what I mean? I like him as a second baseman, and you got that middle infield with him and Gleyber Torres. I like that tandem. And so you'd like to be able to try to keep that intact for years to come. I mean, LeMahieu's good, man. What can I say? This guy comes up with big hits and big spots, and then he's going to be solid in the field. Like, he's a reliable player. And, you know, that's the thing that fans have to understand. With championship-caliber teams, it's not necessarily about having all the star players. It's about having guys that are reliable, guys that are consistent, guys you can depend on. And you can trust DJ LeMahieu. And so, yeah, I'm with you on this one. I don't think you want to mess around with that one. Just get that taken care of so he can be in the fold for years to come.
What are you thinking here? This is obviously not a 7-year deal. This is like
this is probably a 3-year deal.
Three or four, yeah.
Three or four-year deal, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe
he's 31 years old. That makes sense.
Yeah, if you did a 4-year deal, he strikes me as a guy that at 35, we're not going to be sitting here saying, wow, that was an albatross and a huge mistake of a contract.
No.
I don't see that at all.
No, because he's not that kind of baseball player, right? It's not like he's all about trying to have power numbers. It's about him putting the ball in play and being able to take advantage of, you know, opportunities, take advantage of mistakes from pitching when he gets them. I mean, this guy gets a lot of hits. I mean, the guy's already got 18 hits and he's only had 42 at-bats. Think about that. He's batting over 400. It's unbelievable, man. This guy's a machine.
He really is. He is just that. He is a machine. And, again, the consistency part of it. Now, he is somebody that had won a batting title before he got here, but everybody's always going to raise their eyebrow whenever it's Colorado. They're just going to look at it and wonder how much of that played into it. But with everything that he offers you, I look at him and I thought he was the MVP last year considering everything they went through.
Yeah.
And I think he's truly the most valuable player that they have because of all the different things that he can do and how reliable he is.
Yeah, I mean, he's right there. Like, he's right there. He's one of the most – like, last year he was – you could make an argument that he was the MVP of the team. That's how good he was last year. I mean, and he's off to another fantastic start this year. I'm just starting to think that this is who DJ LeMahieu is.
Yeah.
And that's great. Like, that's something, somebody that you could have at the top of your lineup. He's going to set the table for everybody else. He's going to get on base, and he's going to create opportunities for scoring for Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton. And that's exactly what you want. So I don't know why you would even flirt with the idea of letting this guy get to the open market.
800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. So it's all there. The Yankees starting pitching, a mess outside of Gerrit Cole right now. The continued struggles, so to speak, even though he homered last night, of Gary Sanchez. And is he snapping out of it? And how do you approach Gary Sanchez for the long term? Because it's going to be a big question here over the next month or two when somebody like Real Muto becomes a free agent in the offseason. Everybody down in Philadelphia has been pushing hard for the organization to sign him, but they haven't given any indication that that's happening as of yet. So, you know, looking at that situation, getting into that, and also LeMahieu and not letting him go. It's all on the table for the Yankees. We've got plenty more on the Mets. 10 games with the Marlins in 3 weeks. Is it too much to ask to beat up on a bad team? And don't give me 6-1 to start. Don't. They're not a good baseball team. We'll discuss it all, but we want you involved in the program next. It's Carlin in for DiPietro. Actually in for Dave. Rick's not here. He's got no internet as of yet. Oh, Godspeed out on Long Island. Things are just, I think it's 300,000 people in the tri-state area are still without power right now.
Wow.
And could be until early next week. Oh my God.
That's crazy.
That is a mess.
Just chalk it up to 2020, man. This has been a crazy year.
I got to tell you, I'm getting a little tired of chalking things up to 2020.
I know, man. 2021 can't get here fast enough, right? It can't get here fast enough. I'm over it already.
Oh, my God.
Like Ricky said, he wanted to opt out of 2020. I was ready to opt out, too. Throw in the towel. Throw the damn towel.
Could somebody please send me to the alternate site? I'd like to see what that looks like right now.
Exactly.
Lots of Yankees talk. Lewis is in Williamsburg, and he is up first this morning on DCR. What's up, Lewis?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
I don't get.
Yeah. This is any universe where Clark Schmidt could be worse than J.A. Happ.
I don't know if that exists.
It doesn't exist. He missed the same spot 15 times in a row.
I'll tell you what, even more so would be aggravating at the moment, and I don't think it's gotten ironed out yet, that J Hap vesting option for next year. Oh. I mean, you think about that for a second. So in the full season, it was supposed to be 165 innings or 26 starts. And I don't know if that's, you know, there were some dispute as to whether or not that just goes down to prorated. Don't be shocked if the Yankees start holding back Hap's innings a little bit so they don't get on the hook for $17.5 million next year.
Well, they'd be justified for holding back his innings just because he's not pitching well.
Exactly.
It's not even about the contract and the vesting option for 2021. It's just like, you're a liability. You can't pitch. Like, he's bad.
What else you got? All right, he's gone. All right, next.
I mean, there's nothing else to say, right? There really is nothing else to say.
Well, really, the fact that
bought here to be a back of the rotation guy. Like, we need you to eat innings in the regular season. That's all we need you to do. We're not asking you to make any postseason starts. Just eat innings in the regular season and back end of the rotation. Give us 5 solid innings. You can't do that. You can't do that. We're paying you 8 figures. You can't do that. That's disappointing, man. That's ridiculous.
It was an obvious point by the caller, yet it absolutely bared repeating. J-Hap is awful. Let's hit Don and Patterson next. Don, what's going on, brother? How are you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, me and my friends call him Sonny Hap.
And meanwhile, look at what Sonny Gray
had. That's disrespectful to what Sonny Gray is doing right now.
Bobby Vasquez 2.0, right?
Yeah, it goes anywhere else, and the guy's great.
Now, as far as DJ LeMahieu, I mean, you give that guy a blank check. He's been nothing but great for us. Didn't he bat like 500 with runners in scoring position last year? It was crazy.
Yeah,
he seems to like being a Yankee. He keeps his head down. The guys seem to like him. I mean, you got to keep that guy, man. You got to keep him. And Canty, what time do you think Rico's been going to bed with all this power being out?
I'm going to say he's been going to bed earlier just because they don't have any power. Like, sun goes down, I think they all take it down. So I'm going to probably put that around 7 p.m.
I'll go 5:30.
Really? You're saying 5:30? So he's fully embracing this Amish thing, huh?
What else is there to do?
I mean, the next step is them moving to Pennsylvania, right?
I think so.
Next thing, right? Okay.
If it were me, what do you want me to do? Read? I'm sorry.
Oh, man. You know what, CeCe? You've been talking about DJ LeMahieu, and you know who else is coming up big in spots for the Yankees? Mike Talkman, man.
Yeah.
Mike Talkman, man. Again in the second inning, taking advantage of the Kingery error, you know, RBI double to center field. Like, that's the kind of thing that you're looking for, right? Just solid at-bats, putting the ball in play, understanding the situations. You got runners in scoring position. Let's do something with it. Two outs. Here we go. Like, I mean, listen, man, two-out hits are killers. And for Talkman to be able to take advantage in that spot off of the miscue, what was that, the Urshela ground ball?
Yep.
That Elflin fielded? Yep. Elflin fielded, and then he threw it to Kingery? Yeah, I mean, that opportunity, like, those are the things, those are the small little plays that you look at and you say, that makes the difference over the course of the season, and those are the things that you look for in the postseason, taking advantage of the other team's miscues, making them pay for it. Talkman is another one of those guys that does that.
I don't know if we talked about this on the air or off yesterday, but the fact that Talkman does everything that he does so well whenever they call on him, his own versatility almost works against him being an everyday player, you know?
Yeah.
The idea that he can come off the bench after not playing for 2 days and get you two or three hits in a game, or pinch hit and deliver in a big spot, or with two strikes on him, all that stuff. The fact that he's able to do all that just makes him such an incredibly valuable Swiss Army knife for the Yankees, that everybody that's screaming for him to play every day, I think it's, I mean, if you want to take the two, look at him and Andujar. Andujar is gone right now because he needs to play every day. He needs to get consistent at bats. It's not that he can never be that guy, but right now he can't be that guy, and the Yankees can't afford to have Andujar up here and not being able to help them in that role.
Yeah, if Andujar is not hitting, then you've got to use that spot for somebody else, right? That only makes sense.
Like, and also somebody who's better defensively.
Yeah, exactly. And Duhar, you're not having him in the lineup for his defense. You got him in the lineup for his bat, and if he's not contributing in that way, then why is he here? Like, listen, I understand he's a talented player, and I'm not ignoring what he did a couple of years ago, but, you know, it's clear that he needed to play. He needed to get at bat so he can kind of find it at the plate. With Talkman, you don't have those concerns. He is versatile. He's probably the guy that you trust the most coming off the bench in the outfield, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah,
again, that's something that's invaluable because he doesn't have to play every day. He doesn't. He doesn't have to play any day. He doesn't have to be in a rhythm. You can call on him whenever you need him, and he's going to show up. He's going to produce.
It's, in essence, being a sixth man, so to speak. And when it may not be a role that you want to play for the entirety of your career, but if you do it well on a really good team, people are going to take notice of it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you know what? I don't even know if it's a six-man. It's kind of like Kyle Korver. There might be some games that Kyle Korver doesn't get in, but when he comes in, you know he's going to be a knockdown shooter from three. Mm. Like, that's just what it is. It's the same thing with Talkman. You don't know if he's going to play in this game, but when he does get in the game, he's going to produce, and he's not going to be a liability in the field.
This right now has me convinced that you're not going to have and that Andujar's going to get traded this year. That I think definitively at this point he's going to get traded for in a deal for a starter. I would be shocked if that did not happen either during the season or if there's not somebody that's truly available that's worth giving him up for in the offseason. I could absolutely see that.
So you're saying this is his last year as a Yankee?
I think so.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Based on what Gio Urshela has been at third, I could absolutely see that. No question.
Let's hit Joe. He is in New Jersey next. Joe, what's going on, brother? How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I think that the first thing that the Yankees need to do is bring up Clark Smith, and it's not to keep on the J-Hap rag session, but the guy is horrible. He looks like a deer in headlights. The same way like how Sanchez looks like a deer in headlights when he's up at bat. It's really scary. We need to trade for a starter. I agree with you, Andujar, even though he has so much potential, I think he's expendable. But I'm also concerned with how Gleyber Torres and how Aaron Hicks have been, and I think that that's somewhat of a surprise and somewhat of a concern, I think, as well. What do you guys think?
I think it's early to get wrapped up in Torres, Chris.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Torres, and quite frankly, I'm not worried about Aaron Hicks either. I'm not worried about either one of those guys.
I mean, Hicks is coming back from the injury. I'd give him a little bit of time here to get right. And with Torres, look, we've seen enough consistency from him that as he is going through this slump to start the year, I have virtually no question that he's going to come around. And that's one of those things that we've talked about where the Yankees can navigate that for a while and let him get his way out of it without him having to put a ton of pressure on himself to get out of it.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine, right? I mean, this is an unprecedented circumstance, right? We've never seen a season like this, and for the guys to start spring training and have to stop because of COVID and then have a three-week ramp-up period before the season, you can understand why guys wouldn't be right, you know, in the first couple of weeks. Just give him some time. It's going to happen. Gleyber Torres is a really solid baseball player. Like, we've seen that in the last couple of years. Like, he followed up 2018 where he had 24 home runs and 77 RBIs with a 2019 with 38 home runs and 90 RBIs. Like, the guy is legit. Like, it's okay. He's an all-star middle infielder. He'll be fine. Aaron Hicks, again, you mentioned it. He's coming off the injury. Aaron Hicks is going to be the center fielder for the Yankees for the next 7 years. That's just what it is. He's going to be fine. He's a pro's pro. He's not somebody that's going to drive the ship. He's another one of those kind of complementary pieces that's in the lineup, and he's really good defensively. So I don't have a lot of concerns about those guys. The guys that I'm concerned with the Yankees are the pitchers not named Garrett Cole and what's going to happen with Gary Sanchez. Those are my biggest concerns.
Hey, today, 4 p.m. on ESPN. It's a second round coverage of the PGA Championship, or you can sign up for ESPN Plus right now. Get 12 hours of exclusive feature group coverage. PGA Championship is on ESPN and ESPN Plus. Tiger is teeing off later today with McIlroy and Justin Thomas. Tiger was one under yesterday, but that is right around.
Two under.
Oh, he's two under. My bad.
Two under.
But that's right around when 4 o'clock when it comes on ESPN. I believe he's teeing off at like 4:58 or something like that.
Yeah,
Eastern
Tiger's
time.
Teeing off at 4:58, and then you've got the group with Brooks Koepka, Gary Woodland, and Shane Lowry at 4:36. Brooks Koepka, by the way, is a machine.
He really
like,
is.
This guy is setting himself up to try to win his third straight PGA Championship. Like, he's unbelievable.
Yeah. He's the DJ LeMahieu of the tour right
there
now.
There you go. Exactly. Of the PGA Championship, he's the DJ LeMahieu. No question about it.
Let's hit Adam in New Jersey next on 98.7 ESPN. Adam, what's up, buddy?
Hi, how you doing?
Great.
So my question is basically, it's been 11 years now. We're on the chase for 28. With the shortened COVID season, 102 games short, do you think it really has merit to it? Or the same amount of merit that it would for a full season?
Here's what might be unfair about it, Adam, but I think it's true. For some teams, it has merit. Like for the Yankees, it has merit. For the Dodgers, it would have merit. For the Marlins at 6-1, no, it would not have merit.
I hear you.
No, I mean, it's true. If you had a team that you know is just not that good but played well for 55 games, I mean, that's not out of the realm of possibility to happen. We see that other seasons, and then through the course of 162, that grind really reveals who the really good teams are, and it's very rare that you get a mediocre to bad team in the postseason. Meanwhile, this year, that could absolutely happen.
So, Carla, let me ask you this. Out of the division leaders right now, you already mentioned the Marlins. Who else do you think is false flagging? You got the Yankees in the AL East. You got the Twins in the AL Central. And you got the A's in the AL West. In the NL East, you mentioned Miami. NL Central, you got the Cubbies. In the NL West, you got the Rockies. So out of those division leaders, who are the frauds?
I think the Rockies are the frauds. Fraudulent. Yeah, I think the Rockies are fraudulent. I'm not going to call the Cubs fraudulent yet because they do have the talent that they do. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect them out of the gate at 10-3.
Nor did I.
And to have the Brewers at 5-5. But I would say those two, and obviously Miami. Oakland, I can't call them fraudulent just because the A's always do this, right? I mean, they always end up being much better than we think they should be at this point.
I feel like the A's and the Rays are like that every single year. They always play above what we would expect them coming into the season to be. They always do it every single year.
You know, this is an interesting weekend for the Yankees because you got a chance here with the Rays at just 5-7.
You could bury
them. Yeah, you really could. And that's an opportunity that you shouldn't let get by. And by that, I mean a minimum of 3 of 4.
Yeah,
you know, then they're 6 games back in theory of what you're doing. I think that would be about right. By the way, the Orioles, who are still in second place, have gone back and have lost 4 in a row. So
exactly,
they went back to being the Orioles.
As Denny Green said, they are who we thought they were. They are who we thought they were.
Pete is up in New Hampshire. He is next on 98.7 ESPN. Pedro, what's going on?
Hey, guys, what's happening? I'm a big Yankees fan here, and I know we talk about playing to the back of the baseball card. That's why I'm not worried about Sanchez. I mean, it seems like he's finally got his defense in order a little bit. He's going to hit. He's a guy that hits, and it's just like worrying about Torres. These guys are going to hit. You just got to give him some time. I mean, I'm not worried about him.
Well, when you say he's going to hit, he's going to hit home runs. That's what he's going to do.
What else do you want on this team? And that's what they play to nowadays anyway, right?
I would just want him to be more consistent offensively. I mean, there is a guy that 2 years ago hit 186.
Yeah, I know. He was out.
Yeah. We lost him there.
Yeah, well, I get where he was going, though. I mean, Gary Sanchez's talent is undeniable. Nobody's disputing that he's not a talented hitter. It's just a matter of getting him to play up to that talent, those expectations, every single game. And he's been really inconsistent, man. And so when you start talking about is he the guy for the Yankees behind the dish long term, I think that's one of the things that you have to bring up in that conversation is his lack of consistency. And you start to wonder if you keep seeing it, is this just who he is? Like, is he going to be a guy that's going to hit, you know, somewhere around 220 and give you 25 to 30 home runs? Is that who he is? And is that good enough for what Brian Cashman envisions his catcher being? Don't know.
Yeah, what would bother me about that is, all right, he would have to be considerably better defensively. Like, I would have to see a marked improvement from him overall defensively to really be just fine with dealing with some of that inconsistency. It's just, my biggest issue is that these slumps just last so long. And look, maybe he is snapping out of it. We'll see this weekend. You know, we'll see if he's getting his timing back and all that. Hopefully that's the case, but at the same time,
He's an automatic out in the lineup. And that's not how Brian Cashman built this team. He didn't build this team where you have automatic outs in your lineup. Like, this team was built to put relentless pressure on opposing pitchers and opposing defenses. You can't pitch around anybody in the lineup. That's how it was designed. And so if Gary Sanchez all of a sudden becomes this albatross, this guy that, oh, yeah, we know he's going to be an easy out. He'll get himself out. All you got to do is get him to chase a little bit, and he's going to take the bait. Like, that can't be what Gary Sanchez is. Gary Sanchez has to be somebody that pitchers fear. Like, that's the whole point in having a guy at the catcher position that can put up the power numbers that Gary Sanchez is capable of. Like, he's not the best catcher defensively. He's gotten a lot better, but he's not. And so if he's not going to be one of the best offensive catchers in the game, it makes you reevaluate whether or not he needs to be your guy long term.
And
that's absolutely fair.
Yeah, and that's why I was talking about a Real Muto-type situation. If you could still get a high return on Sanchez either later this year or this coming offseason, which I think you will be able to, then I absolutely would investigate it. I think it would be worth it if I felt confident that I could get Real Muto here. Let's hit, who's been waiting? Joe in Staten Island is next on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Joe, what's going on, bud?
So you got to read the tea leaves. Two out of the last 3 years, the Yankees drafted catchers in the first round. I don't think they want Sanchez long term. That's number one. And number two, you brought up Gio before. This is a 60-game season. You play the hot hand. When are they going to move the guy up in the lineup? I mean, he's been better than everybody but Judge and LeMay.
I don't think there's a need to move him up yet.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah, I think Gio being what he is perfect. You know, yeah. You're when you start ramping up expectations on a guy like that, you don't need to add that to him. He's doing everything you need and want him to do. So why move him up just because other guys aren't performing right now?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah,
I think he's just fine where he's at, and I don't want to take at-bats away from other guys. I'm not taking at-bats away from Gleyber Torres just because he's struggling. Like, I'm just not going to do that.
No chance.
I'm not taking at-bats away from Stanton. I'm not going to do that. So, I mean, and Stanton's been good. So, I'm not doing that. So, Gio Urshela is fine. He's going to bat over 300, and he's going to play a gold glove caliber third base. Why do you need to go changing things now just because you got some other guys that are up in the order that are struggling?
You don't need to. You don't need to at all.
I wouldn't do that. I would
no, absolutely not. No, with Dave there, I am also a sports schadenfreude. There's a part of me that would rather see the teams I hate lose than see the teams that I love win.
What's wrong with you, man?
I don't know.
What's wrong with you?
It's been a question that we've been asking for a long, long time. Still no answers, and yet I'm making a living out of it. So here we are.
But you're a Yankees fan, though. I mean,
I'm actually not.
You're not a Yankees fan.
I'm not a Yankees fan. I'm doing a Yankee podcast.
Oh, yeah, you're a Rangers fan. That's right. You're a Rangers fan. I don't know how the hell that happened.
It's a long story. I grew up a Met fan, and then I bailed on them when they traded Mookie.
So who's the team, if you're a Rangers fan, who's the team that you love to see lose? Because your team doesn't win a whole lot.
Well, so I'll be honest with you. For a long, long time, I could not stand the Yankees. Couldn't stand them. And
okay.
I would say
what
over
was that,
the last...
What was that rooted in? What was that rooted
well,
in?
Well, it was like, rooted what? In my father. So my father grew up a Brooklyn Dodgers fan. And we would drive past Yankee Stadium. There wasn't an outspoken hatred. There was... we don't even acknowledge it exists. Like, I remember flipping on... Yeah, I remember flipping on the 81 World Series, and my father immediately walked up to the TV and turned the channel. Like that was two teams that had bailed on him, or that was one team that had bailed on him with the Dodgers and the other team that he couldn't stand. So we were Met fans growing up, and occasionally I'd be like, hey, maybe we should watch this. What's that? No. It was just.
So the hatred was passed down from your father.
Okay. Yes, absolutely.
That's where it came from.
Yes.
And it's to the point where you just don't even acknowledge the Yankees. You didn't
for a while
growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it was more of an outspoken hatred for a long, long time. And I have to tell you, I'm kind of more apathetic toward it in getting older. Like, I still don't love them, but I also look at what they do, and I'm kind of fascinated by them, which is why I'm doing this podcast.
So there's a little bit of admiration in there.
There's a little bit of admiration in it, but it's more fascination. It's more like... how they continue to do these things. Plus, I like Aaron Boone. I do like Aaron Boone a lot.
So it sounds like now your hatred for them turned into apathy, which then turned into a little bit of envy just because of how they're run and how they're always consistently competitive?
Well, it's never been envy because I don't like the idea of somebody automatically thinking they're better than me. And that's the way every Yankee fan ever had acted toward me. Whenever I was a Met fan growing up. And that's tough to take.
So you go from being a Mets fan to a Rangers fan.
Yeah, and that only happened because my brother had moved to Texas, and we went to a bunch of games down there, and there were really good seats. And, Chris, the truth is, when did I bail on the Mets? After they won the World Series. So I have a thing about rooting for the loser. That might be a bigger, bigger issue.
Yeah, that's like, just, you're a masochist. You just love pain. You don't want to enjoy your fandom. You want to wallow in misery.
It might be. Because like in 2011, when they
you should go back to being a Mets fan then.
Well, I've had my share. The Rangers had a sniff. They came within a strike twice in 2011 of winning the whole thing. And, you know, it didn't happen. And
I feel like you're a fraud baseball fan, though. I feel like you're a fraud baseball fan. You grew up a Mets fan. Now you're a Rangers fan, but you do a podcast, Savages in the Box, for the Yankees. Like, it's just I feel like you're a little bit of a baseball fraud. That's
just me. Okay, but do I have to be a Yankee fan to talk about the Yankees? I mean, I'm more objective about them.
But you said you're fascinated by them. Like, I don't know that people are fascinated by teams that they don't like.
No, I think that I think that's possible. I think you could have guys who are again, I don't look at them the same way that I used to. There has absolutely been more of an apathetic aspect of it than an open hatred of them. Before, it was a strong hatred. I was offered a ticket to Game 7 against the Red Sox in 04, and I refused it because I did not want to be there. I was convinced that the Red Sox were going to lose the game because that would be the most painful way that they could lose. Come back from 3-0, give themselves a sniff, and I didn't want to be there because I had been there for Game 7 in 2003, you know, when Aaron Boone hit the home run. So, and I was in the parking lot by the time the ball landed.
I understand. I got you. Okay.
Anyway, I don't know if it's just getting older or what it is. You don't want to get into my head. That's the last
place. No, I don't
want
to get
into
your head. I just find it. I find it very interesting that you're fascinated by the Yankees and you're not a fan of them. Like for me, I think the Mets are dysfunctional a lot of the times in spectacular fashion, but I'm not fascinated by them.
I'm fascinated by how the Mets continue to do this. Like I spent a good 5, 6, 7 years really close to that organization working for SNY. And doing the Mets pre and post game for 5 years. So I've been fascinated by how they continue to screw things up in such predictable and remarkable fashion. They're more fascinating than the Yankees from that standpoint. Even when the Mets suck, like we saw this past Sunday, they're always going to find a way to be interesting. So
when a player goes AWOL, they're gonna actually decide to hang on the rim and try to make the guy look worse than he already does.
Yeah,
which in turn makes them look bad.
And let everybody think this guy might be dead. You know, so if that's what you're gonna do, they're unreal. Putting a guy on a plane who has a concussion, like how do you do that?
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Yeah,
have no idea.
I enjoyed seeing it for many, many, many years. I did. And that's what I'm talking about. I'm more fascinated by the Yankees, by the fact that we can sit here and this team is so overly loaded and they are the ultimate first world team with first world problems. We're sitting here 20% of the way into the season and we're talking about the third starter. And legitimately, and I think it's legitimate, people are really, really concerned about that for the postseason.
Well, they should be, just because they know that the goal for the Yankees is not getting to the postseason. It's winning a world championship. And they're going to need a third guy that they can depend on in that starting rotation with Gerrit Cole and Masahiro Tanaka. We thought that was James Paxton. That's why Brian Cashman traded for him. But, you know, it's a situation now where his health, you have some serious question marks as to whether or not you're going to be able to rely on him once we get to the playoffs. So, yeah, it's a legitimate question. Not to mention the structure of the postseason, because you said it's a best of three, actually, to get in the first round of the postseason. You're worried about, you know, what happens if that goes to a third game. Who's going to be your guy?
I honestly couldn't hate the structure of the postseason more because of that, because there is no true reward for having been the best team over the 60-game season. If you want me to believe the season is legitimate, then you have to reward that team. You know, the Yankees should not be having to play, or whoever it is, should not be having to play in that first round, and they expanded it because they wanted more playoff games. I get that. but I don't think it's right because that really increases the chances that the best two teams don't make it to the World Series.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I understand what baseball was doing. You wanted to expand the playoffs because it was such a small sample size. You're talking about a normal regular season being 162 and you're going down to 60 games. So, I mean, circumstances, the law of averages doesn't have the opportunity to play out and the cream doesn't rise to the top. So I get why baseball decided to do it. But as a result, there is a downside. And if you're one of the top seeds in the league, then you're probably going to be a little more nervous with that first series just because you recognize that anything can happen over a three-game set. Anything. Like a five-game set, seven-game set, you like your chances because you have more talent, more likely than not. But in a three-game set, anything can happen. And so, yeah, that would bother me a little bit. But, again, with Garrett Cole and Masahiro Tanaka, I feel pretty damn good about the first couple of games in the three-game set.
800-919-3776. We're going to hit the Mets here for a second before we get back right to the calls. Get on board. Good time to all get right through. And everybody who's bond line, sit tight. We'll get to you in a sec. The thing I just look at, and I'm just going to make it simple, okay? With this expanded postseason, there truly is, and I don't care what the situation is right now. Should the Mets be in the top half of teams in the National League? The answer is yes. So can you find a way here to beat up on a bad baseball team when you're playing them 10 times in the next 3 weeks with the Marlins? Is it too much to ask that you go 8-2 against the Marlins if you're the Mets and you are a better team?
Is it too much to ask? 8-2 is aggressive. I would probably say 7-3. I would say that should be what they're aiming for. Yeah, 7-3. Yeah, at a minimum. 7-3. That's what they're going to need. I mean, they've been on the, they played 13 games in 13 days. So, I mean, they have an opportunity for an off day. And now they've got the Miami Marlins and they've got the Washington Nationals the next seven games. So they need to focus on this seven-game homestand at Citi Field. You get to sleep in your own bed. Take advantage of that and go out there and try to win these two series. Do that, and then we'll worry about what happens after that. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. In these 10 games that they got coming up with the Marlins, they absolutely need to win seven at a minimum.
It's not outlandish to ask for when, for instance, if you're going to get on teams like the Yankees for consistently beating the teams they're supposed to, maybe you should do it yourself. And that's what a lot of Met fans do. Yet, consistently, year in and year out, these are the kind of games where they end up going 5-5, and it kills them in the end. You know, those are the hidden losses, the hidden games that in the moment they hurt so much, but you forget about them later on. And when you're thinking about how things fell apart later in the year or something like that, then, or you're coming back and having a big second half of the season, those games would have killed you in the first half.
No, you're right. I mean, the Mets haven't taken advantage of the softer spots in their schedules the way that they should in years past. You're hoping that this year would be different. The one thing that I will say with this team is that, you know, we want to see them get into the postseason, and you're talking about how anything could happen in a three-game set. They got the best pitcher in baseball in Jacob deGrom, so you would feel pretty good about them if they did qualify for the playoffs, that they would have a chance to be competitive in a three-game set. It's just a matter of this team being able to try to put it all together and making sure they have the opportunity to qualify for the postseason. As we talked about it, the top two teams in every single division in baseball is going to get in, and then the next two best records in each league. So if you're the Mets, you're figuring that somewhere around 500 ball should get you in. And so that's what you got to find a way to do. Got to find a way to be able to right yourselves, get fat against the Marlins, and then play 500 ball, and hopefully you'll find yourself, you know, competing in the postseason.
800-919-3776. Waiting on the phones, being very patient, is Chris in Bayshore. He's next on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Chris.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Listen, Carlin, I got to take you to task on this match thing. I think you're being way too hard on him.
Okay.
You know, a guy that size throws that hard left-handed, you got to be a little patient.
Well, hang on a second. Don't throw the word patient at me. No, don't listen. It's one thing if you think I'm doing too hard on him. Don't throw the word patient at me with Steven Matz when he's been up here since 2015. I mean, we're 5 and 6 years in, and I get it. You're from Long Island and all that, but come on. I mean, patient, the one thing he has done the last 2 years is at least prove that he can stay healthy, but I'm not buying patient. He's an average pitcher. He's a pitcher with a 4 ERA, or it's maybe slightly above average, but he's never been a guy that is going to definitively be a 15-win guy. And I thought that's what it was supposed to be.
Well, what about when you look at him and Cliff Lee side by side, and then Cliff Lee?
Don't. Come on. Cliff Lee? Cliff Lee was the best pitcher in the game for a period.
Yeah, exactly.
And Steven Matz has never sniffed that.
Okay, when you look at the comps, right, and when you look at when Lee became real, real good, it's very close to Matz. So you could have a year from Matz where he just becomes – you know, he comes out of that, whatever, that average tag you're giving him, and now he's real good.
I'm not giving him an average tag. He's average. He's giving himself that tag.
Yeah, I'm saying. So that's why I'm saying you hang with him, because you could get a guy like Lee, no, in a year?
No. I don't see Steven Matz winning a Cy Young and an ERA title. Nah, dog.
No.
I don't see it.
To your point, just to humor you for a second.
Oh, my God.
I went and looked to see where Cliff Lee really turned over the top, okay? Cliff Lee, in his third season, in his first full season in the big leagues, went 14-8. And he had an ERA north of 5. But then the next year, he won 18 games. Then the next year, he won 14 games. And he wasn't Cliff Lee yet, but that's a lot of games to win. And you might be having your team score runs for you, but I'm sorry. Don't try to turn this into he's not Cliff Lee, or he could be Cliff Lee. How long do you wait? And how often, by the way, does that guy come along that late in his career, Chris?
Not very often. And so, yeah, I don't necessarily like that comparison. But Steven Matz has made strides. You know, the first couple of starts, I thought we were really on to something this year, just because he had the tendency to blow up in early innings and not find a way to be able to right himself. But he did that in the first couple of starts. He gave up a couple of home runs, and yet he was able to somehow, some way, find a way to get back on track, and he gave his team a chance. Now, you didn't come up with anything of significance in those games, but I'm just saying he was able to find himself. You didn't see that this week. And so it actually went the other way, where he just imploded. He had a meltdown. And so I just, with Steven Matz, I don't know how long you're supposed to wait, but to me, based on what I've seen of Steven Matz, he's not a frontline pitcher. Steven Matz is going to be a middle-of-the-rotation guy. That's just who he is. I don't look at Steven Matz as somebody that has the stuff to be a Noah Syndergaard type. I just don't see that. Maybe that's just me, though.
You know, it's interesting because when he came up in 2015, they had a lot of faith in him, they being the Mets, and I'm not saying they were wrong for this, based on the idea that they had him pitch in some big elimination games in the minor leagues. And they did think like there was a little something to that. They felt like he had true guts. And that's why they were comfortable pitching him in the postseason as they did that year. He's got guts. I'm not doubting his guts. But I just don't think he's ever going to be more than he has been so far. And that's a fourth starter in baseball. I mean, a career record, and I know it's the Mets. Trust me, I know it's the Mets. A career record under 7 games under .500 with an ERA of 4.1. That's a little bit better than average right now. A little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he's, like you said, he's the definition of average right now. And it's unfortunate for the Mets because you kind of need him to be better than that based on what you got going with your rotation and not having Syndergaard and not having Stroman. But, I mean, That's where he is. I mean, to expect Matz to be something other than what he's shown you so far, I mean, you're setting yourself up for failure.
Cliff Lee.
Yeah. He's out of his mind comparing him to Cliff Lee. Like, I don't even want to revisit that.
Tony in Staten Island. Tony, what's going on?
Oh, nothing much, guys. A couple of things real quick. I know you were talking about DJ LeMahieu being extended. I don't think that there's any reason why they shouldn't extend him for 5 years. And they really need to trade for a starting pitcher. I think that Brian Cashman is a brilliant, brilliant guy with some of the moves that he's made. But I just feel like, you know, I mean, sometimes whether it's Hap or Paxton or Sonny Gray, it's kind of like that Ed Whitson disease. You pitch for San Diego, you're phenomenal. You come to the Yankees, you can't find yourself. And then you go back and you do phenomenal. I think that we need a top-of-the-line starting pitcher, and we have a lot of depth in which we can trade, and I don't think Sanchez is our long-term solution as catcher.
I mean, there's a lot there. Let's start with the end. I mean, Sanchez being the long-term catcher is going to be an interesting situation that's going to play out here over the coming 2 months, I think. And mm-hmm. they have been steadfast in standing by him. I wonder if that this kind of slump does continue, if he doesn't snap out of it. I don't think that's going to continue.
Yeah, here's the thing. He's got to snap out of this. I don't think this is a situation where he's going to be as bad as he has been the first 2 weeks of the season. But what he gets to, what he shows you in 2020, I think that, you know, it could go a long ways into Brian Cashman's determination on whether or not they're going to move forward with him. Now, I just believe that the organization trusts what they see with the talent and that he'll be here beyond 2020. But, I mean, it's not off the table to consider, you know, making a move at the catcher position this offseason, especially if you could make a run at Real Muto, who's a really good catcher. I mean, you're talking about a Gold Glove catcher and one of the best offensive catchers in the game. Like, he's a really good player. So, I mean, if you can get him for just money and you could use Gary Sanchez to bring back, you know, some assets that you might need for the future in order to keep this dynastic window open, then I could absolutely see Brian Cashman making that determination. But I just feel like they love Gary Sanchez, they love the talent, and they're going to give him every opportunity to show that he can be more consistent.
The other part is LeMahieu for 5 years. Again, I would not be, if that's the difference between keeping him here and not, I would not be averse to that, because he is a guy that is as steady as he is. I would expect to continue to be able to hit until he's 36 years old. I wouldn't have a problem with that. What's fair, Chris? I mean, if you can get him for 4 years and 80, is that fair? $20 million a year?
Yeah. That seems a little bit rich, but I mean, I don't think that that's outside of the realm of possibility. You know, four years, 80.
I mean, I'd probably say
I like 4 years, 72 a little bit better, but you know.
Yeah. Listen, even then, I think it's absolutely fair.
Yeah, I just don't think the Yankees realize they don't want to be in a situation where they're bidding against themselves when it comes to LeMahieu, right?
Right.
You know what I mean? Because he is 31 years old, and although we love what he brings to the table, I don't see a whole lot of teams that are going to be willing to put $20 million on the table for him. I just don't see that, especially coming out of a pandemic situation where the financials are all messed up anyway. So, you know, it's going to be on the Yankees' terms, and I think TJ LeMahieu, I think both parties would be interested in having – this marriage continue a few more years. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look,
yeah.
I think when you have a player that consistent and he comes back the next year and continues to show he's that consistent, mm-hmm. then you have to not let that get away. I think it's incredibly important to not let that get away. 800-919-3776. It's Carlin and Canty on 98.7 ESPN up until 12 noon. We have got Islanders playoff hockey game 4 Islanders and the Florida Panthers coming up then. Hey, today on ESPN Daily, New York Mets star Pete Alonso set a record for rookie home runs in 2019. But before he took baseball by storm, Alonso suffered childhood bullying. Hear how the slugger learned to stand up for himself on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. Buster Olney is a big part of that, and he will join the Michael K. Show later on today at 5:30.
Carlin, I was kicking it around with Santiago. If Paxton continues to struggle the way that we've seen, and he doesn't get his velocity back, if you're Brian Cashman, do you explore the possibility of bringing over Trevor Bauer on a rental for the postseason? He's a free agent after this year. If the Reds fall out of it, would you consider trading for a guy like that? It shouldn't cost you much.
It shouldn't. Yeah, you should not get hung up on what you'd be giving up there. Yeah, I would. He's, again, I don't think I'm going to be able to find the guy that solves the problem definitively the second I get him. You know what I mean? Like if for whatever dumb reason, if the Indians fell out of it and they, you know, Shane Bieber's approaching arbitration and they actually thought about that, well then yes, then I'm going to go and do what I have to do to go and get Shane Bieber, because I'm going to have him for a few years. But I don't think that'll happen. With Bauer, if he is my best option, and Chris, I think it's a great name. Because
it's not a terrible option. He's got extensive postseason experience.
He's got
swing and miss stuff. The last 3 years, over 200 strikeouts.
It's not a bad name at all. Don't get me wrong. Again, this is the embarrassment of watching the Yankees, right? You're always looking for the best of the best of the best. And it feels weird if you settle for less than that. And that's why, like, when I say Trevor Bauer is the best name, or one of the best names that could be available, it's not a knock on Trevor Bauer. It's just that Yankees are always ace hunting, right? So I don't think the ace is going to be available. But yes, I think that Trevor Bauer is absolutely a name I would kick around.
Yeah, I guess I just look at him as a guy that you would trust to make a postseason start, right? Somebody that could give you five innings of two-run ball or better, and then turn it over to your bullpen. I think Trevor Bauer is more than capable of doing that. Now, he's got a colorful personality, and that's another thing. But for what we're trying to get done, if James Paxton doesn't show that he's going to be healthy and that he's going to be reliable, I think you absolutely have to start looking at options outside of the organization.
And as a rental, I mean, can Trevor Bauer keep his mouth shut for a month and a half if he's got a chance to win? I think he can.
Yeah.
I think he probably can.
Yeah, but plus he's going to try to get a payday, right?
Right.
I mean, so he's going to be motivated.
Exactly. One last part of this, though, and I brought it up earlier, and I know where you are on it, but I want to give you a little, just my thought process behind it. Because they have to play this 2-out-of-3-game series at first, I just think the idea of holding back Gerrit Cole, if you needed him in a game 3, wouldn't be the worst idea in the world, and trying to win the first 2 with an opener in Tanaka. Or if you felt like that was your best way to go. Because they are, in theory, they're going to be a lot better than whoever the 8th seed is in the American League. That's going to be a team that's a 500 team. So if you are up against the wall, wouldn't you rather be in the position with Cole there and not have to turn to an opener in a game 3 and hope to put it together?
Well, that's assuming that you win with the opener in one of the first 2 games. What happens if you start the opener and you lose one of those games?
All right, then how about this? Then Cole, who doesn't like to have his schedule interrupted, but I think we can agree that hasn't been a big factor this year because it's been nothing but interrupted so far. I leave Cole for the elimination game. Like, if I lost game 1, do I pitch him in game 2? You know?
I see you were going with that. Like, so if you started Tanaka in game 1 and then went Cole in game 2?
Right. I started Tanaka in game one, and I held off on naming my game two starter.
Well yeah, I see where you're going with that one. You know what? I would prefer for this not to be an issue. Like, I just don't think Brian Cashman should let it get to a question of what strategy you want to deploy in that three-game set. You need to have three pitchers that you trust to make postseason starts once the postseason gets here. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I think you don't even – I don't think it even gets to the point where we're having this conversation, you know, once the regular season is winding down. I think he makes the move. Because the deadline's at the end of this month, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So I think he makes a move at that point if James Paxton doesn't show – that he can be that dude. This is going to be a huge start for him on Sunday, man. Huge start.
Absolutely.
Huge start. So we'll see what happens.
800-919-3776. Joe in Amsterdam has been patient. He's next on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Joe, what's going on, bud?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good.
Okay, I wanted to know, once the Yankees clinch the playoffs, we know the Yankees and anybody – don't really have a home field advantage. I know they'll be sleeping in their beds, but they don't have the crowd. And I wanted to know, will the Yankees consider maybe quarantining a few of their top players once they know they clinch so they don't get, you know, COVID from the players they're playing against, like what happened with the Marlins and the Cardinals?
Yeah, Joe, the only problem there is the last thing you want is for your stars to go sit out for a week or two weeks if you're gonna do that. And that's the last thing they're going to want, Chris, right?
Yeah, they don't want to get out of a rhythm, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know that you would take that approach. I think it's all about just making sure that you do your best to follow the protocols.
Yeah. And they'll sure rest that, him. Yeah, maybe there'll be days they say don't come to the ballpark. Maybe, you know, maybe. But yeah. I doubt that would be the case. I would have a lot of trouble believing that players would want that and that the Yankees would do that. They may rest guys, but I don't think they're quarantining anybody. Jesse in the Bronx is next, 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Jesse, what's up, dude?
Oh, it's Dempsey from the Bronx. You must
Dempsey.
Have heard me.
That's okay. That's all right.
Well,
man.
I wanted to talk about the Yankees quadruple C. I think everybody needs to pump the brakes on this. If you could look at every other team in New York, I'm a Giants fan, I'm a Knicks fan, I'm a Rangers fan. I'm not going to get a championship run anytime soon. Everybody, like, my whole life I've been nothing but seeing playoffs and success from the Yankees. I trust them. I think they're going to make the right decision. Even if they make the wrong decision, they're going to fix it with three more good ones. You know, like, Sanchez is not really causing us any issues right now. He's been playing good with defense. The one time we really, really needed him was last night when everybody was out with DJ and Judge, and he pulled a home run, and he got it to a one-swing game. So the pitching's bad. I think they'll be fine to work out with time. It's not really spiting us, so it's not that – I'm not worried. You know, why is everybody so worried?
Because the Yankees haven't won a championship in 11 years, and the bar is set differently for this organization – and they are the ones who set it there.
Yeah, we haven't been to the World Series in a decade. That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's the problem. So.
And that's not – you can point to all the other organizations. This is the New York Yankees. There is a defined line of success in a season and non-success, and that line is a championship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's from Hal Steinbrenner. Like that's what it like that he's the owner. He says, yeah, the goal is to win a championship. If we don't do that, we feel like we've fallen short. Aaron Judge, same thing. Like that's what they're saying. So it's not we're not judging them based on our standards or expectations. That's based on their standards and expectations. So everything that happens throughout the course of the season, that's how we're evaluating it through that lens. So the questions that we're bringing up, I think, are fair questions that have to be answered.
Islanders coming up at the top of the hour. They are in game four against the Florida Panthers and obviously trying to wrap this up. Wrap it up now, Chris. Wrap it up now. Don't put yourself in a squeeze box. Don't put yourself in a little bit of extra pressure because then all of a sudden the tides completely turn in this series.
Yeah, then the pressure goes all on the Islanders, right? If the Panthers are able to push this to a game five, Like, you don't want to be in that situation if you're Barry Trotz and company. So I think they will take care of business today. I mean, they made some uncharacteristic mistakes in game three. You had the penalty early on in the second period that led to a power play goal from the Panthers, and then you had the Varlamov penalty in the third that led to another quick goal for the Panthers. So I just think that they'll clean up the mistakes, they'll clean up the penalties, they'll play a clean game, and I think that this is the game that we see them impose their will and close out Florida.
I would be surprised if they didn't. I think that they're a good enough team that where they should not put themselves in that kind of a position, because then you're squeezing the sticks, then it gets more stressful, and when you do that, all you're doing is just putting infinitely more pressure on yourself than before. And that, like we said, is coming up here in a few minutes at 800-919-3776. We got time for a couple of more calls. I did want to get into some football for a few minutes before the end of the show. The Daniel Jones, it is a tried and true tradition, isn't it? The first stories to come out of training camp, it's always about somebody putting on some weight, and Daniel Jones has put on an additional 10 pounds, and that's a lot of the first stories coming out yesterday off of him speaking for the first time. You know, Chris, I think that, you know, Jones, it's been so underplayed, the loss of Nate Solder. And I'm not saying that it's going to make the biggest difference in the world, because we know what he's been. But for Jones, it just adds the additional pressure, because you have potentially two rookies starting a tackle or kind of a journeyman type guy. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, you know, his legs, we know what a weapon he can be with his legs. But I'm wondering how much that ramps up the pressure on him.
I don't know that it necessarily puts more pressure on him. I actually like the fact that Jason Garrett is going to build more elements into the offense where they move the pocket, move the launch point. Because you do now have a quarterback that's capable of using his legs to get out of trouble. Remember, going into last year, Eli Manning was the starter. The system was built around him. Mm-hmm. And so they had to retool that offense on the fly after week two when they decided to bench Eli and go with the rookie. And so now, having, you know, this opportunity to assess what he did well, what he did poorly, and then getting the workouts down at Duke with his former coach and, you know, quarterback guru, I think Daniel Jones is poised for a big year. And the Giants are going to need for him to have a big year. But to your point about the offensive line concerns, I mean, your offensive line all of a sudden blocks a lot better when you get your quarterback on the move. Like, there's less pressure, right? Because the quarterback is not a sitting target in the pocket. And that was the one criticism that we had about Daniel Jones in his rookie season: ball security in the pocket. Well, if you're moving the pocket, you're giving him more opportunities to protect himself, and you're being able to extend the down by virtue of his athleticism. So I feel good about what the Giants could be under Jason Garrett with this offense. Jason Garrett has been known for being able to develop young quarterbacks, right? We saw it with Tony Romo. We saw it with Dak Prescott. There's no reason to think that he won't be able to have success with Daniel Jones.
I sit here more than a year after the draft and am infinitely confident in Daniel Jones becoming a star. Yeah. I really am. And I'm one of the dopes that thought it was a massive mistake by the Giants. And I still think Dwayne Haskins is going to be a terrific player. I really do. But that aside, he has established pretty early through his play last year. Yeah, there were bad games. Yeah, the fumbles were an issue, but he cleaned that up later in the year. And I'm excited to really see what Jones and Barkley can be together if they're both healthy and on the field at the same time, specifically the health with Barkley. And I'm wondering about that offensive line now, and if any of that shapes how they deploy Barkley at all, considering their biggest strength is going to be between the guards and not necessarily the tackles.
Well, here's the thing. I think there's ways that you can help young offensive tackles, right? Jason Garrett has talked about wanting to use a two tight end offense. Mm-hmm. Remember what they did going out and signing Levine Toilolo in free agency to go along with Caden Smith and Evan Engram. I mean, you can protect the edges if you have, you know, tight ends sitting out there to help with those offensive tackles, both in the run game, but also in the passing game with being able to chip before they release. So I just think there's going to be a lot of flexibility. There are going to be a lot of answers for Daniel Jones in terms of how to, you know, minimize the pressure on those two young offensive tackles if it ends up being Pert and Thomas starting on the first week of the regular season. But I feel like the Giants' offense is poised to take a huge step forward. I'm not really concerned with that side of the ball. My biggest concern with Big Blue is on the defensive side of the ball.
I think the Giants are going to have to score a ton of points.
We have no idea what they're going to do in their secondary with their cornerback situation. I mean, you got Marcus Golden back, but, I mean, your pass rush struggled even with him last year. So I'm a little bit worried about the Giants' defense. I don't think they're going to be able to stop many people. So they're going to need for their offense to be really good.
Yeah. If the Giants are going to win games, they're going to have to put up points.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds like an obvious thing, but, I mean, when I say put up points, they're going to have to put up 28 points a game.
Yeah, you're talking about high 20s, you know, maybe even 30s. That's what you're talking about if you're going to have success. But here's the thing. As bad as the Giants' defense is, I still feel like the Giants as a team are going to be better than the Jets in terms of overall record.
I think so, too. I think the Jets' schedule is just – it just feels brutal. Not that the Giants have it a whole lot easier, but somewhat easier, put it that way. And I can't feel good about the Jets going and winning – 8 games this year. I think if they won 7, it would be a phenomenal season.
Okay, so what do you think the Jets will do in terms of overall record? What do you think they'll be at?
I have them at 5 right now. After Mosley and Adams, I think they're winning 5 games this year.
Okay.
But I do think that you could still feel okay about it and moving forward, and I'd be all right with that.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.